want to know how to find it. Seek it out when they hide it. You know it's in the bag when it's an easy grab. But come on, take a chance now. So go, 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 geocache, geocache. And if you need help, we're right there in a flash. If you got a question, just call in and ask. I cover the stash on the Geocaching Podcast. The Geocaching Podcast.
Welcome to the Geocaching Podcast, episode 443, recorded live on March 16th, 2016. I'm your host, Head Hard Hat with
Scott Burks.
And Taz is gazing off into the sunset. That'd be Taz 427. Hey, wow. You can join our chat room and watch our live video stream, plus participate with us as we record this episode. All this and more can be found at www.geocachingpodcast.com/live. Be sure to contact us via our voicemail line at 630-31-VOICE and at Facebook at geocachingpodcast.com/Facebook.
Is back.
He's back and better than ever. This episode is sponsored by cache-advance.com for all your geocaching needs. cache-advance.com, go find it. Well, today I found out was a record-breaking day in temps. Well, not quite record-breaking, it's record tying, going back to 1945 where it was 86 degrees today.
Wow.
So not too shabby for March in North Kakalaki. So I'm
we got wind. Wind in 50s.
Yeah, well, it's supposed to cool off.
Yeah, it's supposed to be in the 20s this weekend.
Yeah, down to the upper 40s, low 50s for us. So it's like, I may have to wear a hoodie. But yeah, but I'll tell you what, 86 degrees. All the, you can tell it's spring because the tulips are up, the daffodils are up, and the what they call the flowering pear trees are just pure white, poof, and my sinuses have exploded twice. So you know it's spring.
Right.
Mm-mm-mm. Let's see. Not too much geocaching. I plan on doing some tomorrow, which I'm looking forward to. I've got an afternoon plan for some geocaching. And officially, Amy and I are actually going to MOGA 2016. Everything's confirmed. We're all booked. And things are in place for us to be there. We're actually going to be doing some live broadcasting and just having a good old time. So this should be a lot of fun. I've never MOGA'd before.
Neither have I. I don't think I've ever mogged either.
Yeah, so this should be interesting. Good yeah. stuff. How about yourself, Scott? Looks like you had a slow week, huh?
Yeah, I went up, got over 100 over the weekend.
Wow.
Hiked 16 miles, got over 100 caches. It was a good weekend. It was really nice out. Had a lot of fun, you know, DST. So, you know, there's a bunch of events and, you know, went out to that area, spent all day in that area. There was one event in the morning and one event at night. So went to the morning one, cached all day there, and then went to the night one. So,
I thought DSTs were just meant to, I'll use a better word, complain about.
Yeah, but we make events out of it. So, you know, there was actually an event at 1:50 a.m. as well.
It really?
Oh, yeah, there was an event. Yeah, so, but I was going to go, but I wouldn't have gotten home till like 4, because it was like a half an hour away from me. And like, it's like 1:50 to 3:50 or something like that is the event a.m. So I wasn't going to that. You know, we cashed, you know, my feet were killing me after. I mean, that one day, I think we did like 10 plus miles, and then I did another 6 miles the next day.
Wow.
It was, it was a lot of walking, but it felt good.
That's great. Awesome. We'll have to see if you ran into any of the things that we'll be talking about tonight. Taz, how about yourself?
Didn't get out and do any caching. My knee was bothering me after 2 weekends of honeydew lists. But it's getting feeling better, so... maybe this weekend I'll get some caches.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, I'm going to take advantage of the weather while we have it. Of course, tomorrow is the big cool-off, which means probably a cold front coming through, and they're talking possible thunderstorms. But I'm going to go out. Dang it, I need to get me some finds. Just saying.
The weather's supposed to be nice and in low 70s this weekend. So
wow. Awesome stuff. Yeah, looking forward to it. All right, let's move on to the podcast roundup, letting our viewers know what's going on in the geocaching podcasting community and what's going on this week. Oh, my gosh. Either Scott or Taz is not on the GeoGearheads this week. Mm. I'm just saying. They've got – well, you never know.
Yeah.
Daryl might get sick or something.
I might get the call. Never until the show is on. There's no guarantee I'm not on.
Sydney Sawyer, aka Shermanator 18, what a cool name, is going to be going to episode 220, Logging 2, where Sydney Sawyer, the bad cop, and Daryl will be talking about logging again, is what it says here.
So more logging.
More logging. Is it the type that they just run on top of water? That kind of thing. That's interesting. See who to get knock off the whose log, I'm just saying. Logging. Yeah. Let's see. Also, tomorrow on the GeoSnippets Reboot podcast is geocaching hiking helping hints. Wife Amy and I are going to be talking about, hiking, and Scott just prove the point, is definitely part of the things that geocachers love to do, or at least tolerate. And so we're going to go over several really, really good hints that you want to keep in mind before you go out, different signs, things that you need to be prepared about when you go hiking, and also some of the things like certain type of injuries that can happen while you're out hiking as well, and taking care of that. So that'll be tomorrow on the GeoSnippets Reboot podcast. All right, good stuff. Well, folks, we hope you enjoyed watching the show and listening to us each and every week. We have thousands of people that do that, but amazingly very few that actually help contribute to the geocaching podcast to help keep us going. So we ask you, please either consider becoming a patron to our show, where we have we had more compliments, Scott and Taz. That's not good. My daughter's calling. We actually had more compliments about our patron show that we gave last week, talking about the app. That show is actually, I've had more compliments saying best show we ever did, and they absolutely love the extra content. And the way to get the extra content, because we give them about 40, 45 minutes worth. And all the stuff, all the good stuff to listen to, and you can still get it now, actually. All you have to do is become a patron and click on the right side of the screen for geocachingpodcast.com and become a patron, and you will get, when we do extra content, and we will be doing more because we really had a lot of good compliments about that, you have access to. So please go over to geocachingpodcast.com/live, click on the Patreon graphic, and check it out. Throw a couple bucks each month to us and get the benefits, and there are more benefits coming. All right.
Absolutely.
Yeah, good stuff. Yeah,
really quickly before we go on,
sure,
to the what's up,
geocaching question of the day.
Before we go to question of the day, so I used the new app all weekend.
Did you? And
I gave it a full test run, 100 caches.
Not
yet, about 75. I couldn't take it anymore. I literally did about 75, though. You know what really irritated me about it?
What's that?
What really grinded my gears? Did you use it at all? Have you guys used it?
I played with it a little bit, but I haven't, not that much.
Holy mackerel, dude. Okay, it's like a GPS in terms of when you get 30 feet to the cache, it lets you know you're 30 feet from the cache.
No way!
With this really annoying it tells you, a screen pops up, you're 30 feet away. Put the phone down and start.
Can you turn that feature off?
I looked and looked and looked, and I could not find a way to turn the feature off.
Does it keep doing it when you leave the area and come back?
This is what it does. The way to not do it, for anybody who is also annoyed with this, the way to not do it is when you can't, if you click on the cache, so you're going to it. Does that make sense?
Yes. You're heading towards the cache.
Yeah. If you're heading towards the cache, it happens. If you just leave it on map view and just go to the cache via the map view, it doesn't go up because it doesn't know what you're going for. So that's what I did. I just cached that way.
Oh my gosh!
The problem was that I was driving. We were hitting parking grabs, and when you're driving up to the cache, you want to know when to stop so people can get out.
Right.
Well, guess what? When I'm getting close to the cache, this stupid screen pops up over my map. and then I turn it off and I pass the cache.
Oh no.
So, really, really bad.
Oh my. I bet you they thought, hey, this is such a great feature, and that sounds so much like my old E-Trex did that.
Yeah. Oh, my Garmin does it.
Yeah.
My Garmin just dings or whatever. I don't think it puts anything over the top.
Mine says you're close. I think mine says you're close.
Wow.
And then it goes away.
Yeah, it goes away, yeah.
This does not go away until you hit OK.
That's annoying.
Yeah, really. Ooh, bad UI. Ooh, yeah.
We'll put that to the list. And if you want more interesting information, check out our become a patron and check out our last week's patron content.
But other than that, it wasn't bad.
So many people commented saying they appreciated that so much. Of all the stuff that we talked about, especially in the extra content show, because we kind of got into the con side of things, that it really helped them make a decision as far as, okay, this is what to expect when they go to work with it, and we know about this, so, you know, they're aware of it at least. Absolutely loved it. Most talk about show that we've had in a long time, so excellent, excellent stuff. All right. Let's see. Moving on to the geocaching. I almost forgot where I was. Geocaching question of the day. Let's do that now. Geocaching question of the day.
Hey, cachers. This is Lookout Lisa from Cache Advance, and I'm your host for the geocaching question of the day. Well, Cache Advance is your geocaching hub for all your caching needs, including the Cache Crate, a monthly subscription box of geocaching and outdoor gear. Well, Mondays through Thursdays, we ask our followers on Twitter, Facebook, and Google+ a question about geocaching. We recently asked, is there a lot of FTF, or First to Find, competition in your community? Well, after reading through all the answers, we found that FTF hounds and competition vary quite a bit over time and by communities. So here's what we heard. Don shared, well, it fluctuates. You'll have a period where there's several, and then other times where everyone seems either too busy or laid back to go for an FTF. Well, Tom shared, not really. One guy goes for them all. The rest of us gave up. I now call him the coordinate checker. Wow, Tom, I can totally see that. Well, Nora shared, there used to be. I think it's more the newbies who want them most now. We've been there and done that. It's still fun, but if it's too early in the morning or late at night or raining, oh well. It's always fun when you go after a new one or have an FTF party with a few different teams running into each other. We have good folks in our area. Well, Nora, that's great. Well, Tammy on Facebook shared, yes. But after a few years, the thrill has worn off, so we don't rush out in the middle of the night in our jammies anymore. Well, Joe on Google+ shared, I'd call it moderate. There are several cachers who will try for a cache if they can. Many newer cachers are frustrated by someone they consider an FTF hound. Yes, I can see that too. Well, Jim shared, it's like the Indy 500 around here in the San Diego area. Oh, my goodness. Racing to the cache. I can see it now. Well, Ryan on Twitter shared, I can only dream of finding an FTF. I sometimes wonder if these people have jobs other than geocaching. I've lost all hope. Oh, my goodness, Ryan. Well, I sure hope that eventually you can get out there and get lucky enough to find an FTF. And on a side note, I was actually able to get one this weekend. We just happened to be driving out in an area that's rather rural, and one popped up, and it was just a few miles away. So we made a slight detour, made the find, and then went about our day. So that was really fun to do a little FTF dance there with my husband on a rainy Saturday morning. Well, as always, we really enjoyed hearing about FTF competition. And you can too. If you follow us, Cache Advance, on Facebook, Twitter, and Google+, for the geocaching question of the day. Thanks all, and happy caching.
Well, thank you, Lisa. All right, let's move on to this week's episode 443, Geocaching Creepy Crawly Itchy Scratchy. Yeah, it's spring, and one of the things that you know, there are things to watch out by what other people are putting out on the social interwebs, and already I have seen several things about ticks. I have seen several things about snakes, so I thought, hey, why not? We should go through here and just kind of go over some of the things that you should be aware of when you're out geocaching, because sometimes winter doesn't get cold enough in certain areas to even, you know, slow down some of this stuff. So we thought it would be a good thing to go into. So we're going to start right off, and I'm going to see if I can bring this up online here, matter of fact. And let's see, let me bring it up here. Poison ivy is one of the top ones. Now, Chad had to leave off here for a minute because of technical difficulties, but I'm going to bring this up. And let's see. There we go. This is a post that I actually put out last year, about this time, matter of fact, and dealing with, is it poison ivy or is it not? Now, Scott, if I don't know, can you see the picture from here?
I see it. Yeah,
okay, see it. Poison ivy or not?
What, going up the tree or on the ground?
Both.
Yes. Well, a little bit, I get a closer look. Hold on.
Okay, get a closer look.
Looks
let's see if I can.
I wouldn't touch it. Okay. I wouldn't touch it.
Okay. Now, one of the main things that you will hear people all the time talk about, and they will say, leaves of three, let it be. Right. And this, if you notice, is clusters. The leaves look kind of like poison ivy, only these have three and five fingers pointing off of each one of them. This is actually ivy, believe it or not. Not poison ivy, but ivy. This, what we're looking at,
that's poison ivy.
That's poison ivy. Now, the way that
I know. Yeah.
This, you can tell the difference because it's leaves of three for one. You have variegated or serrated edges, which is very common with poison ivy. You'll notice, and this is the big thing, you'll usually see two clumps, one right off of each other, with a slightly longer stem going above it. So the next set of leaves would be another set of three, just like this, right above it. This is what you look at for poison ivy, mm-hmm. is that leaves of three, and you'll have two short ones, one long, and that would be for poison ivy in that particular spot. This one is poison oak. And the reason being, look, leaves of three, two short right off of each other, one longer step above it. Looks like an oak leaf. So this is what you end up having for poison oak. And I think that's all I had on here. I don't think I had... this is actually... This is one that gets confused with poison ivy all the time. And this is called Virginia creeper. I've seen this in Michigan. I've seen this in many, many states.
Yep.
And basically what you have is you have usually one long stem and five leaves. They look very much like poison ivy. They got the serrated edges. They've got the deep grooves on it. But there's five altogether. This is Virginia creeper. Now, I have heard there have been some people that are slightly allergic to this. I have not. But this is Virginia. On the most part, you're usually not allergic on those parts of it. And it fluctuates. I've known people, and I'll bring this back for a minute. I've known people that have gone through and most of their lives never had a problem with any of the poison plants, poison sumac, poison ivy, poison oak, that type of thing. And then, bam, the next year, you know, your blood changes, what, every 7 years, I think they say, that you have the possibility of having different things go through and your blood changes and has the chances of having allergic reactions with certain things that you didn't before. I personally am one of the lucky ones. I am not allergic to poison ivy. So, you know, yay for me.
I am indeed allergic to poison ivy.
Oh, Amy is terrible. I mean, absolutely
once a year
terrible.
I get it. The worst I've had it. The two bad ones I've had, I once had it on my legs. I mean, my entire legs. I wore the one and only time I cashed in my shorts. I learned my lesson. All over my legs. The second time I had it, my fingers, and I got it right here.
Yeah.
And then it exploded, and it was all up my hand, and it hurt. So bad.
Owie, owie.
It was there.
I've only had a poison ivy once. I didn't think I was allergic. I rolled in the stuff.
To prove you weren't allergic? But, what were you trying to do?
Nature called and touched one part of my anatomy, and that part of the anatomy is very sensitive.
Oh, no. Ow. That is, you know, I'm going to give a... Just for everybody to feel better. So, yes, don't roll in poison ivy when...
What were you rolling? What are you...
No, not at that time. I leaned up against a tree and I saw that it was poison ivy and I was like, oh, well, I'm not allergic. I'm not worried about that. And a little on down the trail, nature called and...
Something got held.
Yes.
Did you wipe with it?
He no. had to.
It was a number one, not a number two.
He had to hold it.
Did you wipe with it? What are you doing? You're getting poison ivy on your.
You see, we do live shows like this, and it suddenly takes a right turn where you least expect it. Oh, funny. You got to be careful with such things.
That had to hurt.
So obviously, what happens with poison ivy is there's a set of oils that comes off the plant, and it gets stuck in your pores, and worse, it gets stuck in your clothes. And not only does it stay stuck in your clothes, it can stay stuck in your clothes for a year if you don't wash it. There have been people that I've known that have been in poison ivy last season, came out this season to come into it, and got poison ivy. Because they never washed the clothes. They just put it back and kept it there and caught poison ivy that way. There is a very good, and we will have a link in our show notes on the GeoSnippets podcast. A couple of years ago, we had Jamie Davis, who's a professional nurse, amongst many other things in the medical community, and he did our first aid episode with us. And there's several really good minutes on there. Well, actually, you should listen to the whole thing anyways, because it's good first aid knowledge. But he went over about 3 to 5 minutes on what it is with poison ivy and how to wash it off and, you know, different things. Like after you actually wash the oils off, that's it. It doesn't spread. Right. After you wash your hands, it spreads based on the amount of oils and the length of oils, the time of that the oils have been on your hands. So that's why sometimes you get it in some spots quicker than others. You think you're spreading it, and it's just the way that it was introduced to your body. And he gets all into this. So if you want to check out our GeoSnippets episode 23, we'll have the link in the show notes, because it's a best first aid episode on the planet when it comes to geocaching. Go ahead.
And the washing off completely works too, for the record. Absolutely. I mean, as soon as you feel you touched it, for God's sakes, man, get some soap and water. Something. Yep. Whatever you can, get some water on that and just wipe.
Get it off.
Really well. Scrub it like silkwood. Like, scrub yourself, get it off. And because I've done that, and I didn't get it. You know, I know I've touched it, and Jesse's touched it, and you know, we've scrubbed in it, and it didn't come.
Yeah, some of the main problems that you have, like I said, I may be not allergic to poison ivy. Amy is deathly allergic to poison ivy, so I have to be extremely careful to make sure that my clothes and everything get washed, and we make sure after we go geocaching, everything gets, you know, thrown in the washer right away, just for that reason. Mm-hmm. And while we're talking through here, we're just going through some of the other plants that that I have. And again, the links to all these, all the native plants of the Carolinas, Georgia, and other parts of the United States, we'll have in the show notes as well. And then the other ones that plants, and some people had brought this up, a word that I've heard more in Europe and in Canada than I have in the United States, is starting to pop up more in the United States, is nettles. And oof. They must have changed the parts in here. They used to have a whole thing on nettles.
Oh, they're.
I'll have to bring it up. Nettles are nasty.
Yeah.
And just terrible things to work with. I'm going to have to see if I can bring up another one. Yeah,
stung by that, you know, immediately, and it like it just hurts.
Yeah.
Block party a couple of years ago out there in Seattle. Went to a park and to go after a couple of challenge caches. And we walked straight through nettles. I mean, they were like 5 feet tall.
Mm-hmm.
And didn't realize it until after we were already in there. And it's like, how do we get back out of here?
Yes.
And just nothing but sting, sting, sting. After we got the two caches, we got out of the park, went to Rite Aid, and we got some, we did some research on it. And one of the things that you can do, they have these little stingers that break off, and they kind of they deliver the oils into your skin that way. And it's this kind of like irritated buzzing feeling. It kind of feels, I don't know, kind of vibrating but pain on there. If you get those nettles pulled out, it will stop delivering because it.
It looks like a bee sting.
Yeah, they got these little stingers or whatever that break off, and they have the fluid in it, and they'll keep delivering it into you as long as they're in it. So
yeah,
it just fills out of them.
It's a pain, just keeps thumping and thumping and thumping.
Right.
It's terrible.
And if you get those out of you, it will start the process of eventually going away. It took about a 4-hour plane ride back to Houston to finally almost dissipate, because that was the last caches that we were doing, and we were going to head to the airport and take off. Mm-hmm. You got to clean real well after that as well, but get those little stingers out.
Yeah. Now there's another one. What is the one? Is it stinging nettles? And maybe somebody in the chat room might know as well. There is a plant that grows. It started in Europe and came over in Canada. And I can't remember the name of the one and I don't know if it's nettles or not. I'm trying to see my show notes here. But they grow.
You're talking about the hogweed?
Hogweed, yes.
Hogweed here. Yeah.
Do you?
Yeah, we have it here.
Wow, because that stuff, matter of fact, I think I have a link right here. Let's see if that works.
Yeah, we have occasionally their sedos to pull it here. You actually go pulling hogweed.
Yeah, because this puppy is can grow 10, 12 feet tall.
It'll kill you. That'll kill you.
And the kicker with hogweed is once you get susceptible to the touch of it, you can't go in daylight. Standard sunlight inflames the area. And I don't know how long it takes for it to actually start. Like, I've heard a couple of years sometimes for it to actually come out. But it's this 10-foot-tall plant that looks like giant queen lace. And you get nailed by this stuff.
Yeah, we're always, in our group on Facebook, we're always made aware of, like, if someone sees it, they're like, FYI, this preserve, I saw it. You know, there's hogweed, be very careful. And you do, you'd be mindful of it because, you know, it does hurt.
Wow, that's nasty.
Don't forget about also, like, for Shorty is allergic to pine trees, certain kind of pine trees.
Really?
Yeah.
What kind, Jess, what kind are you allergic to? She says she figures it out after she touches it.
Oh.
She doesn't know what kind it is. She's always like, oh, that was it. And immediately, boom. She knows immediately.
You get all the bumps in there from just pricking you?
Oh, it's just she touches it and boom, she's in pain. Like, thank you. Yeah, so I was telling her to put it on gloves, but she doesn't listen to me.
Yeah, it does happen.
Just want to mention on the nettle stingers, they're microscopic. You can't actually see them. So you do actually have them stuck in you. And using tape, duct tape, there's more than duct tape's more than for camouflage and cache retrieval.
Good to know. I mean, yeah, okay, I'll take a little.
Along with all the hair on your arm.
I was going to take a little Band-Aid pain for that.
Trust me, it's worth ripping the hair off.
Oh, wow. Well, there you go, folks. You learn from people with experience. I actually forgot to put this in my show notes, but ticks are another thing that you're going to definitely want to keep an eye out for. There are
ticks in your show notes?
I did not have ticks. I got all the other creepy crawlies. I forgot to put ticks in here because it's so common. Uh-huh. We are in North Carolina here, which is literally known as the buckle of the tick belt. So we have all the varieties of the main ones in the United States. You name it, there's probably about four or five different versions of different type of ticks that we have here. And of course, several of them carry different things. One of the ones that you're going to hear from a lot of geocachers is Lyme disease. Is one of the ones that you can pick out of those. And the other one is the fever. Spotted fever is another one that you can get from ticks. A little more out west than here, but it does happen. And Lyme disease, from people that have it, will tell you is no fun. So this is something that you very, very much want to take care of. I mean, I cannot even imagine when they had belt buckle in Tennessee, that they had Woodstock, where people were talking about having hundreds of the seed ticks on them when they went out. Hundreds. And so, yeah, that's just nuts.
I think I've pulled off, I think my record's 11 I've pulled off in one sitting.
Really?
Yeah, we get them pretty bad here, but we get the deer ticks. It's only the deer ticks. If you go up to northern Wisconsin, that's where it gets iffy on the Lyme disease. That's
yes.
Where, I think Illinois really they don't really carry the Lyme disease here. I mean, I pull them off.
Oh yeah, but, and if you want to invest, I mean, tweezers work. There are special ways that you need to know how to take off a tick. But the main thing with that, the tick keys do work wonders. They do work very well, and very effective for getting off ticks without leaving the heads inside your skin is basically what you want to be careful of. And the other part, don't squeeze the ticks. I'm just saying. Some people go, it's like a skeet out. No, it's not. You don't want that. Don't do it.
Yeah. Thankfully, I haven't had a tick since I was a kid. So,
oh my God. I get bit every year. Every year. Matter of fact, I can tell you right now, there's a little plastic container in my freezer. Because what you actually want to do, and you may laugh, but this is dead serious. You pull the tick, you put it on a piece of tape, you put it in the container and put it in the fridge or the freezer, and you leave it there. Because if for some reason you start getting flu-like symptoms, you take said tick with you to the doctor so that they can test it, and they'll definitely tell you if that's got Lyme disease or not. So just a word of caution for you going there. So see, now I'm already starting to itch. So this is that kind of show with the creepy, crawly, itchy, scratchy, because this is what we talk about. So yes, you can get ticks 24/7 in just about every state. You can go through. I've had ticks in February. I remember going from North Carolina up to Michigan, and somewhere in West Virginia, middle of February, and it's like, what is that? And it's like, oh, crap. Yeah, there it was. So you can get them. You just got to be careful and find someone you love, because you need to have every part of you checked for ticks. Right. There are tick checks. You find someone you love, and they need to check. I'm just saying. Mm-hmm. All right, moving on. Hey, let's talk about other fun things like venomous snakes and spiders. This is other things that came up recently in Facebook that I said, they put a picture on Facebook and said, copperhead, cottonmouth, rattler, cranebrake, diamondback, coral snake, Massasauga. And I went, yep, that's North Carolina.
Wow. See, this is where I drop off, because I'm from Illinois, and the only thing I tell you here, you got a better chance of dying on an urban cache than you do a woodsy cache here. So, right. Literally, nothing in the woods will kill me.
Yeah.
In Illinois.
We got tons of stuff here. It's not quite Australia, but it's got, I mean, and I was terrified. When I first started going into geocaching, I came to North Carolina and learned all the things that are in the woods, and I'm like, oh, my God, I'm going to die. It's not like they're around every corner going, get them. It takes time and practice to find these things.
I've seen every one of those but canebrake in the woods of Texas. Only the cottonmouth and the coral snake while geocaching. And when I first started on the show, I hadn't seen any of them while geocaching, but done a lot of hiking, and I've seen pretty much all of them.
Right. And
all
it's
venomous ones.
Yeah, because it goes through copperheads, very, very, and most of these, like I said, pulled right out of the pictures from North Carolina. Copperheads, you have to be careful because they blend in with the leaves very, very well. So especially in the fall, it is very difficult to spot them. They are known to climb trees. So you got to be careful with that.
Yeah. Cottonmouths, you need to be very careful of, because they don't leave. When you make a lot of noise,
no,
they don't leave. They'll sit there, they'll curl up, and they'll get ready to strike.
Yeah.
And so down in the swampy areas where you got some of the palm, what do you call those palms, got the big fan that's on ground
level. Big elephant ears,
level,
yeah.
You know, use a stick, lift it up, because I know plenty of people that have found cottonmouths underneath them.
Yep. And the other thing that you need to realize with copperheads is when they're very young, when they're in the young stage, the back part of their tail is yellow. And the reason why you want to be extra special, careful about that, is because I've had people step on cottonmouths and not get bit. Or copperheads, I should say, and not get bit. The problem with the young ones, the ones with the yellow ends on their tails with that, is because when a copperhead strikes, they want to save their venom for what they're going to eat. So they're only going to strike, and they do what's known as dry strikes. So they may bite you, but it may not give you any or part of the venom that they have. the young ones will bite you as hard as they can. So you have to be careful of them. They have no control over it. They're not as prone, and you can actually get in more trouble with copperheads when they're younger than when they're older. Cottonmouths, this is something that you definitely want to watch. Many of the states have them. They're very dark, almost black sometimes, and it's hard to see the markings. Quite frankly, if you're going to see a nice big thick snake like that, you want to stay away from it anyways.
Yeah,
because that is not something you want to mess with.
No, I see a gardener snake and I run the other way like a girl screaming.
We have so many different, and those are the kickers. We've got seven venomous snakes in North Carolina. Texas has what, 12? I think something like that.
12 or 13.
Yeah. How about California? Have you done any research?
Pretty much, they got some rattlers, and that's it.
Diamondbacks. One strike will kill you.
Diamondbacks and. People talk about, you got to watch out for the rattlesnakes. You got to watch out for the rattlesnakes. It's like, you only have rattlesnakes?
Yeah, really. Exactly.
Doesn't the rattle kind of give them away that, you know?
Only if they're
agitated.
Yes, if you startle them, they're not going to rattle and then hit. They'll just hit.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So be very, very careful. But yeah, it's the ones that don't have the rattle, though, you got to be extra special, careful with those. Nasty, nasty stuff. Pygmy rattlers. Michigan actually has this. I'm surprised Illinois doesn't have this. The reason why they're called pygmy, because they only get 3 feet. When you talk the western diamondback and the eastern diamondback, those can easily get 7 to 8 to 9 feet. Mm. Yeah, they're big. Yep. And pygmy rattlers, we've got them here. And you just got to be careful and be cognizant and poke it with a stick. There are many people that have told me this after the fact. Canebrakes I have not played with yet, but actually this came up with the wrong one.
We have deer in our preserve. Some of the deer are mean. Mean deer.
Yeah. See, when a snake curls up like this and it turns that great big S on the top of it, stay away. But you can see the rattle right here too.
I've never seen that, nor do I ever care to see that. If I saw that, I would probably crap myself.
Well, so, I've had geocachers here in North Carolina went to reach up and they're knelt down and have a copperhead between their legs because they didn't realize it was right there.
Here's a cottonmouth that I came pretty close to stepping on with about 15 people on a trail behind me. And, you can tell it blends in pretty well with the ground there. And, you know, I'm like, whoa, stop. And, you know, I can hear people still coming. It's like, snake. And then all of a sudden,
oh yeah,
everyone stopped.
Well, weren't you telling us last year when you were riding on a trail that the cottonmouths would shoot after the first one? You kind of had to time your biking so that between the bikes because of the way they were biting out.
Yeah, well, all the snakes pretty much do it there because they don't have time to kind of skitter out of the way. They don't hear you because you're going at such a speed. When they finally hear you, especially when your chain rattles, they strike at the first bike, but they're so delayed that they come about a couple feet behind the first bike. So when you're the second bike and there, you kind of ease up. It's like, whoa, I need to get a little bit more distance so that they don't accidentally strike me.
Yeah, no doubt. This is our eastern diamondback. We don't have the westerns. We have the easterns. Let's put it this way. One article I read that said something to the point of the odds of you seeing an eastern diamondback anymore in North Carolina is about the same odds as getting hit by lightning. There are people that have been in the study of snakes, have never seen one in the wild in North Carolina because they're almost extinct. But just to give you an idea, one of the largest ones caught was 8 feet long and weighing 15 pounds. That's a nice size rattler. And if you notice this whole section that's down here, this is the southeastern part of North Carolina, Wilmington, which is a very popular beach off of the ocean, is right there. And then you get down to here into South Carolina, that's Myrtle Beach. So, yeah, you got to be careful of the different snakes. And then there's one other one, because people do not believe me when I say that they are here in North Carolina. We actually have coral snakes. And if you go through coral snakes, so if you ever hear the red on yellow, dead fellow, that's what's this here. So if you see the red stripes next to the yellow, don't play with it because it's not a king snake.
It's not a what?
I can't remember. I can't remember because I'll mix it up and I'll make it sound good.
Yes, red on black, lucky jack. Red on yellow, dead fellow. Is how that works.
I'll mix it up anyway. So if I see,
don't touch it.
Don't touch it.
Don't touch it.
I'm running like a girl.
Oh yeah, yep. Yeah. Because these actually have the same type of bite as a cobra. So same thing. Don't mess with them.
I am not a snake person in any way. I see garden snakes freak me out. I'm
You can get bit. And like somebody told me one time, it's not that they're poisonous. Not you still can get bit by a regular snake. Yeah. So
I've been bit by garden snakes plenty of times. I used to catch them as a kid.
Oh yeah, me too. Tons of them. Tons of them. Okay, let's move on real quick. We only got a little bit more to talk about here. Venomous spiders. And the two that there's a whole section. As a matter of fact, we have a link that I'll show in the show notes that deal with by state the different type of spiders that you need to be aware of. But in the states, the two most popular are the black widow and the brown recluse. And the way those work is the black widow, not that you should pick up a spider to look underneath it, but on the underbelly of the abdomen of a black widow has a red hourglass. And there are several different varieties like that. The being bit by a black widow is, from what I've been told, you wish that your bones would, you just die because your bones feel like they're breaking apart. Is what happens when you get bit by a black widow. Isn't that lovely? Now, even better than that, yes, is that the pain is so bad from the bites of a black widow. The other one, which is even more fun, is the brown recluse. And they also call those violin spiders because if you look just not on the abdomen itself, but on the actual body of a brown recluse, if you look, it has kind of like a dark violin on the back of it. And those, again, we have by state, which show which have them. We have both here. Amanda came home one time when she was about 7 years old because one of the neighbors caught a black widow and put it in a little pill bottle so she can come show me. So, yeah, you can any stop sign can have a black widow in it down here. So you just got to be careful. Brown recluse, those have the fun kind of bites that work like Ebola. Where it tears the skin. Yes, it literally dissolves the skin away and the flesh. And if you are, it's like anything else. If you are very allergic to a recluse bite, you can have severe consequences. Let's put it that way. So you got to be very careful with those. And they like cardboard. They like nice, dark, attic-y-like places. And you just watch before you put your hand in anywhere when you're out geocaching because you can get zapped by these puppies, and you just got to be careful. Depending on what state you are, there's other spiders. Well, we won't go over them tonight because there's probably too many people creepy crawly already that you have to be aware of. But just check out your state and see what spiders that are the most harmful for you. So
yeah, a lot of states have a wide variety of recluses.
Yeah.
Besides the brown recluse itself.
Yeah.
But they all look fairly similar.
Yeah.
So if you can identify a recluse, you should be able to identify any of them.
Yep.
Yeah. When I was down in Brazil and got bit by a spider, it was like, okay, I know what a recluse looks like. I know what a black widow looks like. It wasn't one of those. And I had researched the deadly spiders down there, and only one that you need to worry about was the wandering spider. It's like, is that the wandering spider? No, it wasn't. Okay, I'm going to live.
There you go. Well, actually, I remember seeing not a documentary, but one of the shows on sci-fi where they're off adventuring off in Brazil or whatever, and the main guy on there gets bit by a spider, and he's like, what do I do? What do I do? What do I do? And after a short amount of time, he gets to one of their physicians, and he says, what do I do? What do I do? He says, do you remember what it looks like? And he said, not really. I just know that I got bit by a spider. And he said, am I going to die? He said, no, because if it did, you would be gone already. So, yeah, you just got to be careful. And if you do get bit, don't mess with it. Get to the doctor because you're going to want to.
I looked at the bite and it was irritated. It had a good maybe 3/8 of an inch redness around where I got bit.
Yeah.
And started heading back towards the car.
Yeah. If you start getting what they call a bullseye, that's when you start getting worried.
And, I looked at it. It's like, okay, is it growing? Is it getting worse? And, by the time I got to the car, it was actually subsiding. And I was I'm good.
Yeah, nothing makes you appreciate antibiotics, but just saying. a couple other things real quick before we wrap up here. Scorpions. Now, I was actually surprised. We'll have the link in the show notes. We have scorpions. Actually, most states have some form of scorpion or so, but not necessarily dangerous ones. Because even in North Carolina, I know down in, by the Myrtle Beach, down Wilmington Way, there are scorpions down there, and also on the east coast of the state, more north part of it. There's scorpions, but they're not the dangerous, you got the striped back, and you've got the bark spiders and things like that. Arizona, I know, has several good ones. California actually has the Arizona bark spider. That's interesting.
Yeah. The one thing interesting about them is they glow and under UV.
Yes. Actually, I think most scorpions for some reason do.
Yeah.
That they'll do it. But, just be careful, and you don't want to get bit anyway. So, poke it with a stick. And the last one, and people will laugh, but I've been in areas when I was down by Wilmington geocaching by myself. I'm in this nice park. And you've got this gorgeous pond, and with North Carolina, you have the waters can be very murky, very dark, muddy. And I go down up by a bridge, and I'm like, oh, there's the geocache. And I'm looking, and then I kind of looked off to the side, and two eyes popped up. Gators. You got to be careful of crocodiles and alligators if you are in those states. If you're down south, you got to watch for gators because they're ambush predators. They're going to sit there and go, wow, you look big and tasty, Mr. Andy. Come on closer and go from there. So, yeah, be careful out there. They bite.
Yeah, a little bit,
just a bit, and just for your, just to calm your nerves, if you are going geocaching down south, I'll have a link that's on there that tells you living with gators and croc guides to make you feel better.
It's one thing. They win.
Yes.
They win.
Yes. So just be careful. It doesn't mean you're going to get attacked. Doesn't mean it hasn't happened in the past. All right. Well, this is always such a fun, pleasant subject to go over is the creepy crawlies when it's stuff, but it's necessary. People
really. I live in a state that nothing kills me here. nothing will. Literally, it's a great state to be in, I guess, because it's like.
Ours is too. You just got to remember, like I said, you have to try and find these things. They're not around every corner. They're not around every bush.
Oh, yeah. But what I'm saying is that, I will literally go into the woods, and there's a deep, dark hole. I will literally just shove my arm right in there.
Yeah.
No fear.
Yeah.
No fear. Nothing in there is going to hurt me.
Yeah.
I'll glance in there and be like, all right, it's not a, it's not a raccoon in there or anything.
Yeah, well, there you go, rabbit squirrel.
In Texas, you don't do that.
No, because that's snake den country.
That's what I'm saying. That's the difference. Is that it's
we learn and again, this is another thing for you to have in your pack at all times. And I mean because you have signs, you have guardrails, you have all this stuff. Bring an inspection mirror, or bring one of those nice little compact mirrors that fold up. Excellent things to just kind of take a peek because you don't know. And who wants to play Russian roulette with a black widow?
So, again, they win.
They win. All right. Good stuff. All right. Any final remarks there, guys? Good show on good things for you to do. And now I'm going to go take a shower because I got the itchies. All right. Well, let's move on. Thank you, fine folks, for coming on by and for subscribing to the Geocaching Podcast. Thanks to Lisa from Cache Advance for all the things that you do. Let's move on. Please be sure to join us each and every Wednesday at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time for another episode of the Geocaching Podcast right here on the Geocaching Podcast website and www.geocachingpodcast.com/live. The video version of our show is available on YouTube, and the audio version is available on our home website, iTunes, Stitcher, and many of your favorite podcatchers. We love hearing from our viewers and listeners, so please visit us through our social media sites or contact us via our voicemail line at 630-31-VOICE. The Geocaching Podcast is a Head Hard Hat production and is produced by Andy Smith, Scott Burks, Corey Stevens, and Chad Courtney. The show is copyright 2016 by Andrew T. Smith. All rights reserved.